All right, welcome back to another episode of the Edible Valley Podcast. I'm Chef Jonathan Fraser.
And I'm Darren Howlett. And today we have sitting with us Chef Ronald St. Pierre, currently of locals fame, but also of much more of a history in the Comox Valley as a chef.
Maybe. Good day.
Hi.
Thank you for coming out to talk to us.
Maybe you can tell us a bit, for everybody out there, a bit of your pedigree. Maybe you can start off by telling them where your history in the Valley.
Sure. Well, the Valley, it's been 25 years already.
Wow.
Yeah. started in 1990. Was fortunate. I got a job at the Old House Restaurant at the time.
Right.
When it was owned by Mike McLaughlin.
Right.
You probably remember there.
Yes, absolutely. I was cutting my teeth in the serving industry right then. I was the young buck.
Yeah. So in those days, I started as the chef for the upstairs dining room.
Right.
For the first 4 years, we still had the upstairs dining room in those days. Was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And coming to the Valley was really an eye-opener for me because it's so rich in all local food.
Right.
Even in those days, you know, like having fishermen coming and dropping fresh prawns in the sink and the live prawns. It was mind-blowing, you know.
Right.
Because, you know, well, we didn't have those things in Quebec
when I
went to cooking school. And after that, I worked for about 8 years in Vancouver before moving to the island.
Oh, yeah.
And you get fresh food from the supplier, but nothing like what we could get here in the Valley. It was quite incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. And then from there, you've moved on. You've been...
Oh, well, then from there, when Crown Isle opened,
I think I was along with you there, too.
Yeah,
tried
my chance up
stuff.
There,
yeah.
And which was a fun experience. I mean, it was, you know, brand new, shiny,
right,
awesome resort that had so much potential.
And had all the new toys and stuff.
Yes, like yes, exactly. But we opened it, so it was quite challenging as well, right? Like any new operation that starts, it's a lot of hard work. Did that for the first year and decided that it wasn't for me. So moved on, went to help Glenn and Dave Proctor with Otter's Bistro.
Right.
Did that for a couple of years. And then I did also some teaching at North Island College.
Right.
For a session and a half. I really enjoyed that, working with the kids. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
But felt that I still wanted to be more involved directly with the industry. So then went work at Kingfisher with Lucas' father.
Right.
And that was a great experience. 8 years at the Kingfisher.
Did you two cross over at the Kingfisher? I know you worked
there. Yeah, Jonathan was still there when I started at the Kingfisher. But shortly after that, you finished your apprenticeship and decided to move on to...
I headed down to Victoria.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, spent some time down there. So we did get to spend a little bit of time in the kitchen.
That's when I met Jonathan at the time, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
For a short time, yeah.
And then post Kingfisher, that's when you started locals, was it?
Yeah. Then after the Kingfisher, that's when, well, in the last couple of years at the Kingfisher, I was thinking that if ever I was wanting to realize my dream of having my own business, was the time to do it or never.
Right.
Because, you know, you come to an age where, especially in this industry where it's very demanding physically.
Right.
You know, the clock was starting to tick, and and I felt that it was the right time to do so.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
I was going to say, you started off locals, and you started small.
Right. I did. Well, there was few reasons for that. The main reason was for me to go in starting in my own business. After all of the experience I had had in over the years in the industry of working for businesses that had a lot of investor.
Right.
Which can be sometimes also, you know, very good because we all need the, you know, the money to do right. so. But it's also can be very challenging because people that invest into the restoration, the restaurant business or the hospitality, they do it as an investment and they don't necessarily have the same value
right.
of what the industry or the same understanding of what the industry may right. require. Right.
right? Mm-hmm. And that's and, not to, yeah, that's yeah. not to say
so
that everybody's
for me, when
throat,
I but... went and decided to do my own thing, yeah. it was very important to me that I did not have investor.
Right.
So I started small because we went with the mean that we could at the time, and,
right.
which was important, and also felt that, it was also a good thing in a way,
yeah.
because, you get to learn as you grow and so on. And so, yeah, to minimize the risk as well.
yeah, absolutely.
Which was good. Yeah. And the thing is, I've always thought is, in this business, it's important that you give people a reason to come back to your establishment.
Right.
And the one thing maybe that I knew was going to be a challenge is with the first location. It wasn't the greatest location.
Right.
And it was something that I felt that we would still be able to overcome by
right.
providing a good product and a good service. But that said, I it was probably the biggest challenge we had in that those 5 years at that location.
Really? Yeah.
Was the location itself, not being able to deliver the full package.
Right.
So, but we were very fortunate too, because now we have a great location. And,
you do.
Right.
I felt so, I was happy for you when I heard that you were moving there, but I felt so justified for you too, because I think that you came in originally into the old house at a time when it needed revitalization, mm-hmm. and you revitalized it and turned it and kept maintained its great reputation and kept everything going as need be there. And then when you left, it felt like it was such an enormous part of the old house went missing when you left. And then to find now that you're bringing, you took your business that mm-hmm. you'd started up and moved it into those same walls of that old business. To me, it just felt like the perfect fit. It
yeah.
felt like you were finally
it's
back.
It's funny
where you
because
belong.
I have to say, I never thought I would be going back to the old house.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not something I had dreamed of or anything,
right.
but it's just the way things
yeah, it worked
happen,
out.
You know,
yeah. yeah, it's out. Fantastic. Yeah. I think it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I thought it was quite funny because I know we went in there they were sort of doing, I guess, a fire sale, clearing out everything out of there after the last old house was in there.
Right.
And that was when you kind of,
was exactly how it happened for us is I went there and exactly for the same reason, because they were doing, they were selling out all the equipment. And
right.
at the time I thought, well, I'll check it out. And we wanted it to upgrade our tables in the restaurant at the old location.
Yeah.
So I actually bought all the table from the dining room.
Oh, yeah.
and then we met Dell and Maureen, who are the owner of the
right.
old house.
Right.
And we said, wow, this is kind of a shame, because
that was my
it's such a great location
right.
and it's so sad to see it.
Especially after now that the mill's gone, which
yeah,
was the only
exactly.
thing we fought against, the sound of the mill there.
So I felt it was so sad. And I said, well, this would be a great location for local, but there's no way, we
yeah.
can move in the way it is now.
Right.
And we said, well, what about if we were just to take the lower floor and we would need to build a new kitchen
right.
and make an addition. And it started like that. And it just
yeah, I there was
happened.
There was a bittersweet moment in there for me too.
Yeah.
I hadn't been in there for a long time and then went in during that auctioning off. And I had the sushi cart at the time, and just buying up all the old materials. I was, mm-hmm. it felt bittersweet. I felt like I needed to have a piece of the history of the old house, but it was sad that I was taking a piece of it out. But like I said, that's why I felt so elated when I heard that you were going back in. I was like, oh, okay, well, mm-hmm. It just you're carrying
yeah.
on your tradition and and in the great building. But again, something that has always really surprised me or fascinated me is how involved you are in the other side of cooking, not just cooking for patrons or people that are going out to the restaurants and what have you. I mean, I know that both of you are involved in the Comox Valley Chefs Association, but that's I also know that you hold other titles outside of that, or you have other aspects and other pursuits in food outside of actually
cooking.
Well,
for me, you know, over the years, one thing I realized is, you know, when I came to in the trade, I was very fortunate. I had great mentorship in different aspects and along my growing up in this trade. And I'm very grateful for that. And I think it's very important that as we go into this industry and that we also, you know, I love what I'm doing and I love the industry. And to me, it's very important that we support the future of the industry and the young people that come on. And so that's a big aspect of it. And to be involved and with the Chef Association and with you know, the young people that are interested in this industry, it's also very validating for us.
Right.
You know, and it's what needs to happen for the next generation.
Right.
So that's, you know, for any chef that have had you know, chances of having good mentorship, it's something also easier to pass on.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Wow. There was one other thing I wanted to touch on before, you know, majority of my questions are answered, but I earlier on, just before I came in to the old house back again, like I said, when I was about 20 years old, I had been in Vancouver for a few years and I'd worked in a few restaurants over there and very pretty much unimpressed. It's just that I'd grown up in restaurants. It was secondhand language to me. I knew it, but I wasn't really impressed with what was going on food wise compared to my family's old restaurant back in the early or the late 70s, which then we were really focused on a lot of like fresh local, you know, we were buying things down at the docks, what have you. And then you came along, or when I moved back to the Valley, and then I see that you're doing much the same, embracing a lot of local foods, a lot of local cuisine. To me, and I know it's purely my take on it, I know that it's not the way everybody else would see it, but to me, you really started that local movement here. For me, the way I saw it is you were the first person that I worked with in years that really was making an effort to not just go the easy route with what your suppliers showed up with, but you were actually seeking out great local products. And you've never steered away from that. You've embraced that the whole way along. And, you know, I just, what's your take on that? Do you feel like other people have followed suit, or that you just came into that sort of mentality early and it was going to happen anyways and everybody else discovered it too?
Well, it's funny because I see it in a different way, because for me, I don't feel that I have done anything new by embracing using local product.
Right.
It's basically, if you think about it, in our, you know, grandparents and parents' generation, that's all they did.
Right.
It's they were growing their food. They were using what was in season, what was available to them.
Right.
They would make the effort of doing conserving the food for the winter season.
Right.
And that's what food was about. And growing up, I got exposed to that a little bit because I come from a small a countryside town in Quebec, and with long winter and all that, and we used to have a very large vegetable garden, and we would get the beef and the pig from the farmer around the area, and so I was already exposed at that. So for me, it's more of kind of was already my basic value about food, and when I started in the industry in the, you know, late 70s, early 80s, what became trendy in the hospitality and the restaurant business was actually to be able to offer food that was not in season.
Right.
Because that was the new thing where they would start to fly food from country to country.
Yeah, distribution.
And so if you could get fresh strawberry and offer them in the, you know, December or January, was like, wow, I had fresh strawberry this month. And people, it would blow people's mind away. So what really happened to me is when I came to BC was the first thing was for me was also a new exposure to different culture about food, the Asian influence, the Californian influence, lots of new items, lots of new food that, you know, when I was in Quebec and working in the industry, it was a lot more European influence the cooking aspect and the ingredient and all that. So that aspect was a big one, to come to the West Coast and be exposed to all those new things. But when I came to the Comox Valley and realized all of the beautiful food that was already in this area, that really reignited the passion for having fresh local ingredient where not only you can say it's local, but it's the pleasure of working with such great ingredients that are fresh, that high quality, tasty. I always say myself, I'm a lazy chef. No, it's true. I say I'm lazy because if you use really great ingredient with high quality, great flavor, you have very little to do to make them taste good.
Oh yeah, it's
you
true.
Know,
yeah,
if
it's
you
true.
Work
it's nice
right, if you work with ingredients that are secondary and not so tasty, you have to work a lot harder to make the dish taste good.
Right.
So that's how I qualify myself. I'm a lazy chef. But that said, after being in the valley for a few years, what really hit me is that. Like you said, you know, I did make an effort to start to know the community and source ingredient and so on. And there was so many great things that was happening around us here in the valley. But to see some farmer or producer not becoming sustainable at what they were doing.
Right.
And after a few years just saying, well, I'm going to stop doing that because I cannot make any money at doing it. That was difficult.
Right.
And then I realized that it's more than just me using the ingredient. It has to be that, you know, if I want somebody to do bison or to do lamb or to do whatever, for me, they also have to be sustainable at what they're doing. So, you know, it we have it for the future. And that's where when we opened Locals, not only we wanted to offer and serve the food, but we really kind of use it as a platform to start to educate more the public into saying these food are available to me, but they're also available to you.
Right.
And by saying this is where it comes from, this is where you can get the same thing, to also try to get the producer sustainable at what they're doing.
Right.
And of course, you know, in 25 years in the valley, yes, I have seen lots of growth. Lots of really great success story, you know, of a producer that now are doing really well.
Yeah.
And that's very important because we're building our future of having sustainable food in our area.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I remember actually the first time that I went into when you just opened up Locals. I went in with another person that was in food, and that's the first thing that we both took from it. A, that was a great decor. And as we open the menu, we're looking around and you're promoting all of the growers. Mm-hmm. I thought that was fantastic. Yeah.
No, it's important.
Producers. Yeah.
It's nice to be able to say that too. And it has a story to it.
Yes.
Like it makes your food more than just something to eat. It's got a story behind it as well. So.
And you know, we're very fortunate here in the Comox Valley because not only, I mean, it's a passion to me or to Jonathan, but it's also like the public, our guests. The majority of people really embrace that as well.
Right.
You know, you just look at our local farmers market, how successful they have become, and how many people support it.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
It's very good, and it's nice to see, you know, that people value the ability of being able to get those food available to them.
I think actually there's something that I think it was Max from Wait Will when we were talking to him just a few weeks ago. I think he had said, he may have even said it off tape. I might not have made it on, but he said, you know how lucky we are here. Lots of places, you know, they'll have like 50, 60 restaurants and a couple of farms to provide.
Yes.
And he's like, here, we've got a couple of restaurants and 50, 60 farms to provide.
That's
correct. Yeah. It's fantastic. We're really lucky here. Yeah. So,
actually in the Valley, I think there's close to 450 farms altogether.
Oh,
is
my.
What it,
that, 450, I had no idea.
Some of RB Farm, but it's a large amount of production.
Wow, that's fantastic.
That's at least another 350 interviews.
Yeah, that's the next few years of interviews right there.
I would love to get on. Let's, because we've talked about the community and everything, but let's talk a little bit about locals and the restaurant itself. For someone who maybe hasn't been in yet, what can they expect when they go to locals?
When they come to locals? Well, hopefully they expect to have a great dining experience.
Mm-hmm.
We're fortunate, like we mentioned, now located at the old house building down by the river. The setting is beautiful. We actually just opened this last weekend. We opened our patio.
Oh, that's beautiful.
We now have a covered patio with heat, and so that's very interesting. Some people already have enjoyed eating outside.
Oh yeah.
We offer lunch and dinner 7 days a week. We have also Saturday and Sunday brunch that we do starting at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
So what they to expect, we have a great team in the back in the kitchen that cook wonderful food. We have a great team on the floor, the server. We're very grateful. Our employees are wonderful. No, it's true.
Yeah.
We're blessed. They're all friendly. They give knowledgeable, good service.
Right, good. Yeah.
So it's a mixture of as many local food as possible that we can put our hand on that we offer. We have a different selection of lots of seafood, lots of meat, lots of some vegetarian. All our food is made from scratch, so people that come with any dietary restriction, we're able to adapt our dish to their requirement. We have a great selection of local BC wine, lots from Vancouver Island. Also, we offer some new and old world wine as well.
Right.
Originally, when we opened Locals, we had 100% BC wine on the wine list.
Really?
Because that's, you know, wanting to go local.
Right.
That's what we try that. But that was part of one of the things we did change is that the public still wanted to have an option of different.
Yeah, it can be challenging. Well. I mean, there's a lot of great, great wines out there, but that doesn't cover the whole
everything,
spectrum.
Yeah.
Right.
So now I would say it's about 50% BC wine and the rest, a blend of the rest. Right. We offer beer, a great selection of beer, but all our beer are Vancouver Island brewery only.
Yeah.
Just all microbrewery. That was also from the beginning. I didn't want to have to make a decision to which big beer company I would be dealing with.
Yeah.
So I said none of them. We have enough around to.
That's great.
To fill the gaps, and that's another industry. You know, you look at the local beer industry that has that we have around here. There's so many.
Absolutely. That's the other industry I grew up in. My grandpa and my dad were both from when I was. Knee high, they worked for Labatt's, and so we lived in Victoria back then. And I watched the beer industry just unfold as it has over the last 30 some odd years, from when I was that little, to how it's moved from it went from the big giants to now everybody's focused more on microbrews and local.
That's correct.
And it's fantastic. I mean, again, I'd owned a nightclub for 10 years, and The beer politics were just, they were crazy.
Yes.
But I think it's fantastic. I agree. I think that all the local beers, and when I say local, I mean island wide, there's some fantastic products being made for sure.
Actually, just a few months ago, I did a brewery crawl, if you wish. Here in our valley, we have we have three new breweries.
I know.
And, distillery, and it's just fun to see all those new business coming in.
Yeah, we were really, John and I were really excited when we started hearing all this news coming in. We're like, oh my God, like that's a whole new dimension to the valley that we can start exploring. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so again, cuisine wise, though, you wouldn't necessarily call yourself a seafood restaurant. You have a lot of great fresh seafood, but...
Yeah, we could. We probably have the greatest seafood selection in the area, I would think.
Right.
I think. We usually have 8 to 10 different fish available on the menu and seafood, local seafood.
Right.
Lots of shellfish. We get our oyster, clam, mussel, all fresh from the... directly from the producer.
Right, wow.
Which is wonderful because... usually when they come in, they're fresh picked from the ocean that morning.
Right.
So that's a wonderful
big
thing
big change
to
from
have.
Most restaurants, which get them about a week later.
Yes. That changed me like it was killing me for a while. Yeah. But I knew that they would go down to Victoria, sit
in a cooler for waiting to
and
order.
And ship them up.
And then like, back to you.
Yeah.
What am I doing? Why am I doing this?
We have Bane Sound right there.
Yes.
It's right there.
Yeah. And that's a tough... You know what also is very difficult is that we're talking about using local supplier. Well, you cannot use them all either,
right?
Because there are so many, and some of them are somewhat repetitive. You know,
right.
You know, like people that produce mussel, clam, oyster.
Right.
Your fishermen that you'll get your salmon, your halibut from. There are so many out there locally that you know you cannot necessarily do business with all of them.
Right.
And
sometimes
that's difficult too because you know you want to encourage everybody, but you also have to, you know, you built a relationship with some of them, and that's how it happened.
Right.
So sometimes I feel
a little guilty.
Yeah. Well, not guilty. Yeah. I just feel I feel that, you know, so I would love to do business with all of them, but it's not just a reality.
It just doesn't work that way.
It's the same with the farmer. You know, you develop your relationship and you build on that, and you cannot use them all as well.
No, absolutely. I mean, there's some people that, for like just example, there's some people that really excel at growing tomatoes, but there's probably 40, 50 farms that are growing tomatoes here.
Yeah.
And on a large scale.
Yeah.
So.
And that's the other thing is lots of times I have people coming to me and say, oh, well, I'm thinking of starting a small farm. What should I do? You know?
Yeah.
And my suggestion to them is try to think outside the box.
Right.
You know, if you're going to grow zucchini and tomato, but you're going to be only growing them when they're in season because you're using a traditional growing method, well, chances are when your vegetable are ready, the market is going to be flooded.
Right.
And you won't get a great deal for them. And, you know, I won't be able to help you out in buying some. But if you can think outside the box and start growing things and in ways that you're going to demark yourself from the market, then you'll be very successful at whatever you decide to do.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's a big thing, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. For all those new farmers out there, definitely make a stamp
doing
something different.
It's having that distinct product.
It's the same in our business. I mean, if you have to, do something to be different than the next person.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because you have to give your customer a reason to come to you,
not to just anyone else.
Exactly. Yeah. Otherwise, it's very difficult.
Right.
We could all have chain restaurants and French fries and burgers, right?
Yes. Well, maybe it's all going there. I don't know. Someday I tell you, I feel like we're kind of the a dinosaur, you know, in the way that, you know, what we're doing, it's with passion, but it's kind of becoming a bit of the past.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you look at the industry and the way it's going, you know, 85 to 90% now is... like you say, chain and stand, you know,
really,
standard menu and stuff. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's switching also a little bit because people are realizing that, you know, they might not get the best, even if it's maybe a little more affordable when you go to a chain, you get only what you get.
Right,
and
yeah.
So some people now are realizing that it's worth it to maybe spend a few dollars extra, but get the quality that goes with it.
It takes me back to, I served a customer, probably a couple of years ago, from the States, and I have a lot of friends in the States, so we were talking about the differences between the general concept of food, the Americans versus Canadians. And one of the things he said immediately, he said, yeah, I was told to come check this restaurant out, because you do essentially, you know, this is a farm-to-table restaurant. And I said, farm-to-table, what do you mean? And he said, well, you know, that new thing where people, they go out and they get ingredients locally from, like, local farms, and then they incorporate that into their menu. And I don't know if I'm just blessed, or I don't know if I'm spoiled, but I said, to me, that's what a restaurant is. Like, that's a defining trait of a restaurant, not, and he said, oh, that, like, that's a new thing in the States. Like, that's a new concept. And he didn't mean, of course, across the entire United States. He just meant more in the major metropolitan areas. Yeah. This is a new idea. And we had this great conversation, but yeah, it's just becoming this concept to these major metropolitan areas. I assume also within our own country, you know, Vancouver and Toronto and what have you, I'm assuming that that's starting to permeate a bit as well.
Definitely, yes.
Yeah, so I foresee, maybe I'm just being, maybe it's wishful thinking, or maybe I'm, you know, not really, I don't know. But I foresee that this trend going further. I don't see this as a shrinking trend. I see this as, you know, this embracing the local cuisine and embracing your farm fresh. I see that as a growing thing. Sorry to counter your dinosaur thing, but I don't know. I don't see it that way. I see it maybe as maybe we are a little small minded or whatever. But I think that I honestly think that this is going to be embracing these smaller restaurants doing these. You know.
I do agree with you regarding the food, and the other thing is that the fact is also that now with you're looking at for the last 4 years California having all that drought and the growing region becoming more and more difficult. The one thing it does is also it narrow the gap in the pricing on the common products that they mass produce
and
the local mm-hmm. food that we have,
right,
which make it even more interesting now. So if you go to the grocery store these days, you know, you're gonna still pay $2.50-$3 for a head of romaine.
Right.
So when the market, you can get the local romaine for the same price, which, you know, so that's something about.
It is.
So it's gonna make. I think it's going to be good for the local producer for sure. Mm-hmm. But no, when I was talking about the dinosaur aspect of my comment was more of the old-fashioned way of doing everything, you know, taking raw products and having to do everything from scratch and butchering and everything in-house. So that aspect of the industry where now things are a lot more... the industry is going where everything is more processed for them and trying to be more efficient and cost control and so on.
Right.
So that aspect of
taking some of the steps out of
Well, I was going to make a comment there, but I won't. That's our future podcast. We'll touch on this later.
Yes, for sure. It's a whole nother subject.
Yeah.
I'd like to thank you, Ronald, for coming out today.
You're welcome.
It's been wonderful. Now, if we should just give everyone a little bit of information if they want to come see you and visit you at Locals. It's the old house location.
Yes.
Which is down on the waterfront.
Yeah, we're nested in the middle of the old house hotel there.
Right.
Between their two buildings. And so it's Riverside Lane, 1760.
Right.
Phone number is 338-6493. We do recommend people to call and make reservation, especially on the weekend night, because we often have to turn people away.
Right.
But Otherwise, so we do recommend reservation. And we can you can also see our menu on our website. It's localscomoxvalley.com.
Okay.
And yeah.
Great. All right. Thanks. Well, yeah, thanks so much, Ronald. It's
You're
been
welcome.
Great catching up with you.
Thank you. Nice talking to
great
you
to
again.
Great to finally get you in to talk to us.
Yeah, it's been a while.
All right.
Thanks. All
right. Well, you've been listening to the Edible Valley podcast. Check us out at theediblevalley.com or send us any of your emails or questions to ediblevalley@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.